The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
MSW Media.
Hey everyone, it's AG from Mueller, She Wrote and The Daily Beans.
And Steve Pearson from the How We Win podcast.
We're bringing together some of our besties for a live super pod to raise money for the How We Win Fund and elect Democrats in November.
Featuring us, of course.
The hilarious Frangela duo.
Ben and Brett Mazzellis from the Midas Touch podcast.
And the one and only Kathy Griffin.
Join us on Monday, August 22nd at Largo in Los Angeles. Go to howwewinlive.com and get your tickets now.
That's howwewinlive.com.
This is Glenn Howerton. You are listening to What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn, my good friend.
Do you really? Am I really your friend?
No.
Okay. Damn it.
Well, pour yourself a glass, sit for a spill. It's time to have some fun. Do a little thinking, some picking and a drinking. Well, this is what we're drinking with Dan Dunn. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. All right. Why I'm laughing right now, folks. I'm sorry. Welcome to the show, first off, and you heard Glenn Howerton there in the promo. Glenn's going to be joining me from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia in just a little bit, talk about his new whiskey called Four Walls. Why I'm hysterical laughing, and I was laughing much harder before I hit record, is because for the second time in a row, the person you're about to hear from and I were doing an interview, and about 15 minutes into the interview, I realized that I wasn't recording it. So today, right before we started, I said to him, all right, well, I'm going to hit record this time. And my brain farted and I did not hit record. So we just spent a good 10 minutes spewing podcast magic that's just out there in the ether. You're never going to hear it.
So evaporated.
All we can do is try and replicate it right now. And I apologize to him. You know him as this podcast, What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn's roving correspondent. He's the best at breaking down what's happening in this industry and why it matters to you. Please welcome back our dear friend, Brad Jaffe.
Okay, for real this time. For real, Dan Dunn.
I'm looking at it right now. It is recording. I swear to you. And by the way, this why you're on, Brad, is we have breaking news.
Ah, breaking news.
That's right.
I'm patched in right now live from Split in Croatia. Okay, drinking Slivovica all day long, and you somehow, in the middle of the day, you're the person that seems like your faculties are a little bit dulled, let's say.
It's the heat. It's very hot here today at our studio, our unair-conditioned studio. Yeah, I mean, I slip up occasionally, but for some reason, it always seems to be when you're on. I just don't hit record. But you know what, man? I already think what we've got now, just here in this 2 minutes, is better than that whole 15 minutes we just recorded.
This is juicy stuff. And, as we're saying, there is breaking news going on in the world of American whiskey specifically. I'm sure you want to kind of touch on that and then let me weigh in with some of my hot takes.
So basically what's happened is a lot of these smaller craft distillers have been petitioning the Alcohol, Tobacco, Tax, and Trade Bureau. That's also known as the TTB. They regulate alcohol in this country, America. And they just published a notice proposing to formalize the standards of identity for American single malt. They want to, as a distinctive product of the United States. And what that means is, if this rule passes, which it's going to create a category called American single malt, which will be on par with bourbon, single malt scotch, other types of whiskeys that are enshrined in TTB's standards of identity. And it also affords some legal protections, and I want to get into that with you. But first, Brett, how big is this news?
Well, you know, let me just make sure that your listeners haven't nodded off, you know, because this is the type of news and the type of information that is certainly big news for us spirits geeks, to the general consumer, the casual drinker. It's not earth-shattering kind of stuff, but we definitely don't want to diminish the achievement here on behalf of some of our fine friends in the distilling business here in America that have helped really push this thing through. They've been at it at least formally since 2016 with the establishment of the American Single Malt Whiskey Commission, which is put together with the express purpose of establishing these standards of identity. And so that went live, this kind of period of making suggestions that you can do, and you should direct your audience to this page that the TTB has set up until September 27th. If you have something that's really biting at you in terms of, I need American single malt to be this way or that way, it's open to comments right now. Now's your period to weigh in.
What does it mean to these people out there that are making American single malt? Why does it matter that the government officially recognize it? What's the benefit?
Well, it'll be protected now as we enter in, or, you know, with our preferred trading partners around the world, they will be able to respect and or will have to respect that American single malt is an actual category the same way that bourbon and rye is respected. And the first way to do that is to come together and establish the terms of what makes American single malt single malt. Excuse me, what makes American single malt American single malt. As your listeners probably know, single malt is most commonly associated with Scotland, but really all it means is 100% malted barley coming from one distillery. So here in the United States, according to these TTB laid out delineations, it will be just that. It has to come from one distillery, and it has to be aged, produced here in America, of course. And actually, it needs to be aged in barrels that are no bigger than 700 liters, which was kind of an interesting little formality because we've never seen that before with American whiskeys. And also, it can't be distilled higher than 80% proof, or excuse me, can't be distilled higher than 80% alcohol by volume during the distillation process, which is again.
Explain that, Brad. I mean, I know what that means, duh. But I mean, to our listeners out there, when you say that it can't be distilled higher than 80 ABV, what does that mean?
So that's something that's carried through with other American whiskeys, with specifically with bourbon and rye, something unique to our whiskeys in that you don't, when you're distilling a vodka or a neutral grain, you can go all the way up to like basically 99% alcohol. And what you're doing during that process is you're stripping out a lot of the flavors and the components that we want to be able to taste in the grain. So American whiskey, one of the ways that it has a fuller flavor from the get-go is by capping that distillation proof at 160 proof or 80% ABV. So this will be the same with American single malt. Interestingly, if I haven't, you know, put you to sleep already, the thing that also gives American whiskey its real kind of oomph and push and its really iconic characteristic to me with bourbon and rye is that it ages in barrels that have never been used before, what we call virgin oak, virgin cooperage. Interestingly, that is not something that will be true of American single malt, at least as it's structured right now, which I am, you know, that's curious to me personally.
So are some of these places using ex-bourbon barrels to age their?
I would say a lot of the American Single Malt Whiskey Commission was formed, I believe, by 16 distilleries, give or take. It might have been around a dozen. Plenty of them are friends of yours that you've had on your show. Paul Hletko, a few spirits is a big
Stranahan's part of that, too, I think.
Stranahan's for sure. Of course, we have Westward and West Lind up there in the Pacific Northwest that have been, you know, very big proponents of this. Del Bach down there in Tucson. Santa Fe, of course, in New Mexico. a lot of these folks have been producing their whiskey and aging it in barrels that have been used before. I think personally, this is just my feeling, is I thought it would have been really cool to dictate that it has to be virgin oak the same way that it is for bourbon and rye. Because if you're going to do something that's distinct to America, you know, why not carry that through across all the whiskey categories, as opposed to kind of trying to redo some of what the Scotch already do, or what the Scots already do really, really well.
So, Brad, my understanding of why they would not want to be limited to new white American oak is that they want to have as much room to experiment as possible, which has sort of been a hallmark of some of these distillers. They don't want to be constrained by the same rules that that the folks that are making bourbon are constrained by.
Right. Yeah, I totally get that. And I understand that. And also, many of them are committed to making American single malt in this way, right? Because they've been making it for years and they already have stock that's been laid down into barrels that have been used many times before. I'm just saying personally, as a drinker that has come to know and love a certain style that goes along with American whiskeys, with my bourbon and rye, that has that strong barrel influence, it would be cool if American single malt was known for bringing that to its respective category of single malt.
Well, guess what? I think I know somebody who's going to be going on the TTB website and commenting for Javi. Speaking of small distillers whiskey, Brad has got a great piece in, I don't know if it's the most recent, but the Bourbon Plus magazine. Brad did a piece on distilling in Texas.
Right.
And I read that piece and it's fantastic. He did, as always, very thorough in breaking down what's going on there now and how it all came to be. So you might want to check that out in Bourbon Plus. That's Brad's latest. And also with whiskey, as mentioned, I've got Glenn Howerton coming on. You interviewed Glenn for a piece for Rolling Stone about Four Walls. What do you think of the whiskey?
I only tried the older, more elegant expression that was coming from Ireland. I believe the younger stuff has some juice there from Pennsylvania. It blends Pennsylvania rye with Irish whiskey, which is pretty interesting. I have not tasted that. The Irish whiskey is super complex, real depth of finish there. And I was really impressed by it. And I was really impressed talking to Glenn, as I'm sure you were as well, that, you know, he really loves whiskey and he can talk and rap about whiskey at length. And I love when a celebrity comes into the space and it's not just a naked cash grab, which is clearly not the case here, because they're doing it for charity.
That's right.
So nothing but good things to say about Four Walls.
Well, I did try both of the whiskeys, and you'll be hearing that in just a few minutes with my interview with Glenn. Glenn and I tipped a few back. Always fun. Brad Jaffe, appreciate you taking the time. I know it's late over there. What time is it? It's like 1 a.m. in Croatia, right?
Almost midnight. So we're fine. We're fine. We're good.
Okay.
Going to go out, have a good night, drink lots of rakia.
There you go, man. Well, always great to see you, my friend, and we will catch up with you soon.
Yo ho ho, and a bottle of rum.
What, you don't like my singing voice? Whatever. I don't want to be singing about rum anyway. I'd rather be drinking it. When I'm home alone on my couch, dressed up like a pirate, my go-to rum is Batiste. Batiste rum is the first sustainable American craft rum. It's the only known beverage alcohol in the world to have a climate-positive, natural production process without the purchase of carbon offsets. Or Cardi B's offset, for that matter. Though I love to dance to his music when I'm all rummed up and dressed like a pirate. Batiste rum is made from 100% pure fresh cane juice, not molasses or sugar crystals. If you like your tequila 100% agave, then you'll love your rum 100% cane juice. And right now, I've got a couple of offers for you, dear listener. Go to batisterum.com. That's batisterhum.com. Fill up your shopping cart and enter code WWD15 at checkout to get 15% off all your orders. And if you want their delicious reserve rum, enter code RESERVE, you get 20% off. That's cold hard cash. Batiste rum is my jam. Make it yours too. It's proof that great taste with true sustainability is not a goal for tomorrow, but a reality today. Joining me now, boy, where to begin? He's an actor, producer, did a little directing. The
He's written several New York Times bestsellers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He hosts a wildly, co-hosts a wildly popular podcast. It's called It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which is, I believe, an offspring of the television show that he has starred in for 37 seasons. Mm-hmm. 37 seasons of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. He is also a partner in a limited whiskey brand that came out called Four Walls. He's Glenn Howerton.
I am.
How are you, man?
I'm good, man. It's good to see you.
Yeah, you know, it's been many years. We've known each other for quite some time, but we, you know.
You were just telling me how many years it's been since we hung out, and I didn't understand how it could possibly have been that long. I don't understand time anymore.
I'm going to guess it's been 4 years. We lost 2.5, basically, where we didn't, right? We're at that point. And then, yeah, we had dinner.
But you know what? It's one thing to not see, you know, a friend of yours for that long, but it's another thing entirely when you live in the same neighborhood.
When you live 5 blocks away. I walk by, I don't want to say where we're at, but I walk.
Well, you can say we're in Venice.
We're in Venice, yeah. I walk by Glenn's house often, look up longingly.
Yeah.
Think maybe he'll be there in the window.
Right, just looking out.
Maybe I'll just see him.
Gazing out.
It's me, Glenn. Right. Hasn't happened. Anyway, man, great to see you. And
I stay away from the windows.
You should, especially with me coming by. So, boy, there's so much to talk about. I mean, the whiskey thing is kind of what kickstarted this, though. So we should probably start there. You, Rob, and Charlie decided to get in the spirits game.
Mm-hmm.
But is it a one-time shot, or you're gonna stick with this? Because you didn't put out many bottles, right?
Yeah. You know, it was a little bit of testing the waters. You know, maybe you could call it hedging a little, you know, to see if the interest is really there. The most important thing to me with this, really, as a whiskey fan and a whiskey drinker, was to put out a really, really good whiskey. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I know as much about whiskey as, you know, lot of whiskey, or you.
Kidding. Just bragging.
You know, I think I was listening to Ian Somerhalder on the Fred Minnick podcast.
Sure.
And listening to him talk about whiskey, I was like, stupid.
Well, I've had Ian and Paul on this show as well, and they've really immersed themselves. Like, they go out, they're doing the work. He's constantly posting from either the distillery that they're using, or, you know, out on the road,
yeah,
meeting up with the, you know, going to the grocery stores and doing all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you learn.
He has a wealth of knowledge that I don't have. And you know what? I'm going to accept that about myself. The truth is, as it is with many things with me, I've learned to just trust that if I like something, that it's good. Now, that doesn't necessarily apply to everything, which is why, you know, it was an interesting experiment to find out if I could create a whiskey that I really, really liked and see if other people liked it too. And so far, it seems like, you know, I mean, the reviews are, we've had a couple of really great reviews.
Well, I came to the whiskey because my pal Brad Jaffe, who's a regular on this show as well, Brad mentioned to me that he was interviewing you and told me just how fabulous. So you've got an Irish whiskey.
Yeah.
And then you've got a blend of Irish whiskey and American rye whiskey, correct?
Yeah, the so we put out two expressions. One is a, you know, it's funny, we're calling it, we're actually underselling the 15-year Irish whiskey that we put out. And what I mean by that is there's nothing wrong with saying that something is 15 years if it's been aged for 20 years, you know, because you're actually underselling it.
Whatever the age statement is, everybody knows, so you know this, whenever you see an age statement on a bottle, what that means is that's the age of the youngest whiskey.
That's right.
In the blends. But oftentimes, if you buy a 15-year-old Irish whiskey, there's going to be some older whiskeys added as well.
Yeah.
But legally, what they can put on the label is the year, the age of the youngest whiskey in the blend.
Right. Yeah. So there's only four barrels of this stuff, and it's actually been aged for 19 and a half years. Okay. But we wanted to make it, call it 15 years to celebrate 15 seasons of Sunny.
Gotcha. That's right.
So, so we say it's been aged a minimum of 15 years. It's just a better story. But so yeah, it's a 15 year aged, single malt Irish whiskey. And then the other one is, grain and malt Irish whiskey that's been aged for 5 years. Both of them aged in ex bourbon barrels. And then that Irish whiskey was then mixed with rye whiskey from Pennsylvania.
So the 15-year, mm-hmm. a.k.a. 19-and-a-half-year-old whiskey,
yeah.
You only made how many bottles? A limited number?
Well, sorry, I'd say four casks are available for sale. We actually got our hands on five, and the other ones, we're giving out to press and friends and family and stuff like that, but there's only 755 bottles that were available for sale.
Are they gone?
I don't know where we are with that. I mean, we're selling this one because it's essentially extinct, right? After these bottles are drunk, this stuff is gone. Yeah.
And by the way, to find that stuff in Ireland isn't easy. It's not, actually at this point to find it anywhere, because there was such a run on aged whiskeys everywhere, but Ireland was gone. The whiskey in Ireland at the end of the, going into the 80s, 90s was basically non-existent. They were making all of the available, commercially available Irish whiskey in the world was being made at one distillery, right. The Middleton Distillery, and they were down to about four brands, available brands. And so there's not a lot of stock.
There's
a lot of old stock. So when you get some of that, mm-hmm. it's precious.
You've explained it perfectly. I think if you don't know, look, I mean, Irish whiskey, I think in some ways feels ubiquitous, because anytime you go to a bar, they've always got Jameson, they've always got Bushmills. There's a couple things you're always going to see. So you're like, so everybody thinks like, well, no, there's a lot of Irish whiskey around, but you're right. It's only been recently where people started to really become enthusiastic about aged Irish whiskey. So there isn't a lot of it out there, which is why we felt justified in selling it for $1,000 a bottle. Now, keep in mind, we also, all of our profits are going to charity. So we're not keeping any of the profits.
So if I got it right, it's to support the service community in Pennsylvania.
Yes. And we'll continue to, expand, who we're giving to, as we move forward. But it seemed like a good place to start. So
they took a hit during the pandemic, obviously, and a lot of people.
Yeah, we were able to, because there were four barrels, there were four number one bottles of the 15-year. Rob, Charlie, and I got the three of the number one bottles, and then we were able to raise $100,000 for the other number one bottle. So so $100,000.
Can you say who bought this, or it's an anonymous?
It's anonymous. But we raised that money. That money actually went to NEVA, which is the independent venue association. It's the National Independent Venue Association. Anyway, they support small bars and venues.
Great.
So that the $100,000 for the bottle number one went to NEVA, and then all the other profits from the sales have gone to Pennsylvania's HARP, which is the Hospitality Assistance Response.
Do you collect whiskey at all? Is it something that interests you, like getting your hands on old bottles, that sort of thing?
No. I collect whiskeys that I want to taste. So I don't give a shit how old it is. I don't care how old it is. I don't care. If it's good, it's good. Good whiskey's good whiskey. I think I could be headed in that direction, because I do find it interesting, and I'm learning more and more, especially now.
Well, and I think the stories, and I've said this about whether it's spirits, whether it's wine, it's so experiential, and it's not just a zero sum thing where you go, this tastes this way, and that's it's the stories. And that's kind of, you know, I've got a pretty substantial collection just because of what I do. And I like being able to look at a bottle and know what that story is behind it.
Sure.
And why, you know, that said, I also have this like a panicky feeling. Like it, I would be the guy that would be on the airplane and it's going down and I'm going, why did I not drink that 2002 Screaming Eagle? Why the fuck? It's in my fridge. Like it's in my wine fridge. I'm not drinking it yet.
I got to tell you a funny thing. This tells you how little I knew about wine and sparkling wine and champagne. Okay. So over the years, for various landmark occasions in my life, I'd been given some really nice bottles of champagne, you know, some really nice bottles of Dom. And I thought, like, you know, and I'm actually not a big drinker. You know, when I drink, I like to drink something that I really, really like, and I don't drink that much of it. And I especially was never a big wine drinker, not champagne. So I thought, like, well, you know, we'll save these for like a special occasion. I didn't know that you can't do that. Like,
you kept them too long.
Yeah, I kept them too long. Oh, so man. I did not know that like Dom Perignon bottles it when it's best to be drunk. So you could bottle it, you know, it could be a 1995. They could bottle it in 2005, but that means drink it in 2005.
Yeah.
And so my wife and I opened a bottle of, you know, Dom from like 1995 or something like that, that we'd had for 15 years. And it was shit.
It turned.
Yeah, it had turned. And we were both like, I thought this was going to be good. This doesn't taste right.
I made a mental note that I need to actually go through my wine. I have a bunch of wine fridges and I need to go through them soon because I recently was going somewhere and I wanted to impress with a nice bottle and I looked and went, oh shit. Like I started looking at some of these wines going, these are older than I thought. Like you and I were talking off the air before we started about like just with the pandemic and everything sort of losing track of how long things have been. And I'm looking at these wines going, oh, I got to drink this.
You know what I mean? Like that's when it gets weird, right? Where you're like, you've got such a collection of like alcohols that you feel obligated to drink them. You know what I mean? That's probably no good. But I hear you.
Well, I mean, for me, and not so much anymore, but back in the day when I was writing about alcohol for the Rob Report and Playboy, I would get so much of it. And I know people are probably listening going, fuck you.
Yeah,
right.
Fuck you,
but I would get so much of it, it would cause me anxiety because I would go, what am I going to do with all this expensive alcohol?
Right,
because then I felt like it's a commodity. It's something that I don't want to just, you can't.
Sure.
What do I do with it?
Literal champagne problems.
Anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
But so in addition to, by the way, I'm staring, this is the funniest part of this. We're having this conversation and the whiskey is about 6 feet away from me on a table and Glenn set it up with some glasses, but not right in front of us. What was that choice? Why did you make that choice?
You know why? Because you were going to be fiddling with all this equipment and I didn't want glasses to get knocked over
or
bottles to get knocked. I wanted you to have a free space to put things where it needed to be put and then I was going to maneuver the bottles into the right spot. So you want to
try some now? Yeah.
You want to dig into some of this?
I'll try a little bit.
All right. Okay. I'm very excited. I get very excited for people to try this.
I'm excited to do it. I want to give you my honest assessment of it as
please,
well.
Please do. And you know, I've grown to become very excited about this because I don't want to say too much, but all right, let me go grab him. Hold on.
Well, I suspect, and while he's going to do that, I suspect it's something that I've encountered with other celebrity friends that have gotten in the game is...
You want a splash of water with? Did you like that?
Let me try it. Straight up,
I mean,
neat.
This is 127 proof.
Oh yeah, we might want to. Just well, you know, yeah, put a little bit of water in there,
just
please.
Splash.
Yeah, just to spite. And
okay, so we should try. We should try this one first.
Let's try that first. And so everybody knows, when you got a really high proof spirit, especially a whiskey, you put a little bit of water in there to dilute the kick that you're going to get from that alcohol to sort of mitigate that a little bit, and you're able to identify what's happening more in the whiskey sometimes, because when you get that high proof, like the alcohol can be overwhelming. Would you say it was, Glenn?
127
proof.
27.4.
That's a high alcohol content. Especially it's 7:15 in the morning when we're doing this. No. Whoa. All right. So now I'm nosing this thing and
nose it.
And I'm nose nosing it, baby. And I feel like
nose it good. This is the good stuff. You know, this is really This is the 15 year that we're going to get into, dig into right now. Okay. It is a little strange to be drinking at in the morning, but also awesome.
You know what? It's nighttime in Ireland, and we're drinking Irish whiskey. I believe international rules apply. Oh, wow. Yeah. That's good stuff, man. That is, to me, Irish whiskey is the most approachable whiskey, and I don't mean that in a negative, like it's not a complexity, but it's certainly, to me, really well-made Irish whiskey strikes a perfect balance between, you don't want it to be too sweet, but you also don't want it to be, you know, if you get into some of the bigger scotches, especially the peatier scotches, we're just getting that sort of just aggressive earthiness to it.
Yeah.
This one is right there in the, like a nice blend of,
you know, it's interesting. I'd have to look and see what barrel this is from, because this one, I don't think I've had one from this barrel. You know, these are all,
this is the 15 year, or 19 and a half year old.
So. But like I said, there, you know, there's five barrels of it, and every barrel is going to taste slightly different. And I honestly don't think I've tried this one. I mean, I've tried them all, but cheers, buddy.
Sláinte.
I've tried them all, but this is not the one that I've been drinking. I just opened a new one for my friend Dan here. So.
Oh, you're the best.
Yeah.
Look at that. That is delightful. How much you say this is?
The 15 year is $1,000 a bottle.
I've got $75 cash.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Cash.
Right.
In my pocket.
Today.
Right now.
Yeah.
Right one now. Time offer. Take it or leave it. Wow, this is worth it if you're collecting. Now this is, but it does bring up that interesting thing. Like if you buy this bottle of whiskey,
mm-hmm.
do you open it, or do you keep it in your thing and go, this is,
well,
you're not, this isn't going to be available, and you're not going to be able to get this again.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, open it, but how long do you keep it?
I mean, this stuff can be an investment. I mean, I say if you've got the means, and you know, I'll grant you, most people don't necessarily have the means, but if you have the means, I say buy two bottles, keep one and drink the other.
That's generally what,
you know, look, if you can afford $1,000 bottle of whiskey, you can probably afford $2,000. So I think the best thing to do, honestly, and this is not me just being a salesman, I think the best thing to do is really buy one and hold on to it. You know, you could even, another thing you could do, If you're really wild, is buy three, right? I'm actually serious here, right? Yeah, I'm actually serious here. And here's, let me explain.
Do I hear four? four. Sold to the back. Here we go.
No, but I'll explain. So you buy three, you hold on to one, right? Just because you're a collector, right?
Yes.
The other one you hold on to and you sell later for more. You make a profit. You make your money back, right? And then the third one you drink it.
Yeah. Wow.
That's right. What I think is the best move. So everybody out there, go ahead and plunk down $3,000.
You got three large.
Three G's.
Well, so I was at an event this past winter in Aspen for the Macallan Scotch, and they invited their baller collectors. Like, mm-hmm. these are the richest, the captains of the universe, you know? And these guys are kind of doing what you do, except on what you're suggesting, but on a much grander scale.
Sure.
Like, they, you know, they'll buy the bottles, 100,000. So they'll buy two of them, one they can drink and one that they keep too for the collection.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't take it with you though, Glenn.
That's the thing. I think, you know, as you're nearing the end of your life, as you are, Dan, you got to open those bottles.
Not too far off.
Well, you know, listen, man, you know, the liver can only take so much.
That's true. I have the liver. This is insane, but it's true.
Yeah.
I get physicals all the time.
Because
I'm afraid of dying. And oddly enough, I have the liver of someone who's never drank before. It's weird.
Now, how is that?
I'm a
possible?
Freak of nature.
Oh, how wonderful for you.
Yeah. But I mean, everything else is falling. My ass is leaking and I got all these other hair comes out of places it shouldn't be coming out of, but my liver's okay.
Okay. So the other organs are shutting down.
The other organs. I had a pinched nerve recently and I went to find out what was going on. And I asked the doctor, I said, how did I do it?
Mm.
And she said,
by aging.
You're getting old.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That's it. Like just body's falling apart.
Dude,
Thank you, Doc.
I played tennis the other day. It acted like I was a 16-year-old kid and it barely warmed up. It, you know, came home and was just wrecked. wrecked.
Tennis playing. Well, that's the problem, man. Tennis is it's very taxing on the body. I'm going to jump all over the place here, but I wanted to bring up Glenn. In addition to Sonny and all the things you've done, you actually had a small role in what I believe is one of the most underrated scary movies, The Strangers.
Yeah.
The Strangers. Mm-hmm. I love this movie.
It's really good.
I've watched this movie so many times. I'm not going to give it away in case you haven't seen it. Things don't end well for Glenn in the movie. And it's a small part, but it's a pivotal part in there, mm-hmm. I think. And I was wondering, because I know this, I really do know this, and I'm wondering if you remember. When you come into the house shortly before things don't end well for you, scary, there's some music playing on the turntable.
Yep.
What's the song?
Ooh. Okay. Yeah, good question.
And I know this because, I'm not trying to show off, it's just when I saw that movie, the song got me. Damn. So I looked it up. What was it? And I've become a big fan of it since.
I forget. It's been a long time since
I will
I've
give
it.
You a hint.
Oh, yeah, give me a hint.
The singer name is Merle Haggard.
Oh, Daddy Tried.
Mama Tried.
Mama Tried. I'm sorry. Mama Tried. Mama Tried.
Mama Tried. By yeah, Merle Mama Tried. Haggard is playing.
Yeah.
And then Glenn's character meets his demise. Meets his demise.
That was one of those. Like, I've never had much desire to be an actor in horror films. I don't like night shoots, and horror films require a lot of night shoots. I don't like being covered in blood and muck and shit.
Yeah.
It's a tough space to live in for like a month at a time, you know, to live in that like dark, dark, dark place, you know, for a long period of time. So I've never had a large, large part in a horror film. But you know, when I read the script, it was just so, it was great. It was so good. And it was so spooky. It read really, really well. And I thought, well, this would be fun. You know,
well, what I love about it is very simple.
Yeah.
It's, you know, a lot of times I think the horror movies, either they're just relying on gore,
yeah,
or they try to, and you know, there's some supernatural element to it. This one's just, you're in the middle of nowhere and the wrong people show up.
Yeah.
And you're fucked.
Yeah.
You know, that's it. Like, well, that always scared the shit out of me because it feels real. It feels like it can really happen. You know, if you're just, what if you're in a cabin in the woods and someone knocks on the door?
Yeah. And then when you find out the reason why they're doing it, which is really no reason at all, it's even scarier. Like, why are you doing this?
I love how we're talking around it, by the way. This movie's been out for 30. What is the statute of limitations on when you can?
I think we've reached it.
If you're at a party and you're talking about Breaking Bad,
mm-hmm,
and says, don't say what happens.
I think 5 years.
5 years.
At that point, 5 years.
Okay.
Because it's worth not spoiling, but after 5 years, I think that, you know, your time's up. Anyway, that was.
So you say you don't like, but you are a Juilliard trained actor.
Mm.
Do you like to do dramatic roles?
Yeah.
Cause you're so fucking good at comedy. But as we know, to be really good at comedy, you don't play comedy, you play it straight. Right.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. My approach to comedy has always been, if the writing is good, then what's absurd and what's funny about what you're watching is the character, what the character wants, what the character is trying to achieve is usually ridiculous. And that's what's funny. How you go about it as an actor should actually be quite real. Now, is the timing slightly different? Do you play it? You know, I think you have to have a little bit of an ear for it. Acting for me has always been musical. I'm a very musical person. I hear things, I see and hear everything as music. Everything is music to me. And comedy, even more than drama, is a piece of music where the timing is perfect, where it gets loud, where it gets soft, all that kind of stuff. Where you go low, where you go high. I mean, it's literally an expression.
There's a rhythm to it.
There's a rhythm to it. There's a musicality to it. And that to me is often the difference between comedy and drama for me personally.
Well, and it helps too if the band is good. So meaning, yeah. You know, if you're playing off of Caitlin Olson and Charlie Day and Rob McElhenney and Danny DeVito,
yeah,
all of whom, if we're going to stick with this metaphor, are virtuosos, there's got to be, and I guess over all this time you've been doing the show, you've developed a real sense for their particular rhythms, the way Danny's going to deliver a line.
Yeah, we know how to set each other up. That's part of the fun of it is knowing each other well enough to know what you can say to get the best out of the other person, knowing what you can do and say to give them fodder for, you know, creating the best laugh. You know, I to me, the funniest stuff, has often been also when, the Charlie's character has always been a little bit kind of wild and unpredictable and, you know, a little larger than life. And to me, a lot of times, you know, much like with the Golden Girls, I often point to Bea Arthur as one of the funniest people on that show. But it was often because it would just cut to a reaction shot, like of her reacting to, you know, Rose saying something ridiculous.
It's funny you say that. I was watching an episode of Sunny the other night where you and Dennis and Dee are in a castle in Ireland. Mm-hmm. And Dennis is possessed. And there's this great moment when you say something and you're mm-hmm. talking to the castle mm-hmm. and the reaction shot for Caitlin, I just lost it. I was laughing so hard and she didn't say anything. It's just the look on her face.
Yeah.
And then she says, "Who are you talking to?"
Yep.
And then your face. Like, and it's just brilliant. I mean,
it's something we kind of stumbled into with how we filmed the show too, is, you know, it wasn't totally, we didn't totally consciously do this on purpose, but one of the things that I think makes our show have a lot of rewatch value is there's a lot of characters on screen at the same time. We don't shoot a lot of singles, you know, every once in a while, sure, but most of the time we've got multiple characters in one shot, so you can find different people's reactions to things. Every time you watch it, you can see something different, you know. You know, and in that shot, you've got me in the foreground, but you've also got her in the background. So it's not something you have to cut to. You can watch either one of us, you know, or you can watch one of us one time and the other one the other time. And I really enjoy that style of shooting because it's a little bit more theatrical. You get to see everybody at the same time.
One of my favorite moments, you won't see this on the show, but if you go to YouTube and Google Sunny bloopers, this is from a long time ago. I believe it was the Night Man Cometh mm-hmm. episode. There was an older woman that was playing the piano.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently she really was like the character. So there was a moment where she kind of tells you to shut up, or she says, whatever it is that happens, if you're laughing, like watching you guys in this blooper reel try to keep it together is one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Because she was just hired because she had the right look and the right vibe. And then she just started saying shit like that wasn't in the script. None of that stuff was in the script. You know, I was friends with Calvin Coolidge, all that shit. Like,
in the script.
No, she just started improvising. And I was like, this is the funniest shit I've ever heard in my entire, I could not keep it. None of us could keep it together because it was just so, it was so outrageous that she would even do that, and that, you know, she was filterless. She was literally just like, it was almost like she wasn't an actor and didn't know that she was on camera. And when someone would say something to her, she would just react as she normally
As
would.
If it's normal life.
As if it's normal life.
Like, you just brought her in to play piano that day, and it just happens to be a lot of cameras around, but.
But she's gonna say something back to you based on what you said. That, you know what I mean? And it was just I just couldn't keep it together. I could, you know. Yeah, she was
what
actually.
What do you do when you've hit that?
Mm-hmm.
I've had this not with comedy, but I've had it where I'm stumbling on a word or something like, and then it gets into my head,
mm-hmm.
and I can't get past it. Right? Like if I'm emceeing an event or something like that, where I just, what do you do when something gets in your craw that is making you laugh? How do you get past that to finally get the shot?
It's actually really hard because the more it makes you laugh, the harder it is to stop laughing. Because, you know, it's like that. Everybody's had that experience of like being, you know, in class in high school and somebody says something funny and you know, the more you're not supposed to be laughing and the madder the teacher gets, the harder you laugh. You can't stop. So one thing that I have to do is with particular scenes, particular moments, if I know it's the kind of thing that's like, I'm going to break. This is so funny to me that I'm going to break. And once I break, it's really hard to rein it in. So what I will often do is just really try hard to be like, this is not funny. Like, I have to convince myself, this is not funny. I need something right now. Dennis needs something. I need to get this thing. You know what I mean? It's not fucking funny. And I have to, like, kind of get mad and get, you know, like, you know. That's the only technique, really, that I have. Like, biting my cheek or, you know, whatever. Like, digging my nails into my thigh. That shit doesn't work for me.
So is there one person on Sunny that makes you break more than anybody else?
Damn, put the camera on. No, it's pretty even. It's pretty equally stretched out. I mean, I, you know, it's funny. Everybody makes me laugh, but when Danny makes me laugh, it's often the hardest. I don't know if it's, he will just do the most, he'll have the most surprising reactions to things sometimes, like, I guess he's a little bit more unpredictable in some ways. Like, I literally don't know what he's going to do. And that, to me, that makes it often funnier when it happens. There's a blooper from season, I don't know, 10 or 9 or something where, you know, it's the, I think it's the gang group dates. It's from that episode. And, you know, Danny's talking about, Frank's talking about orgies and how he used to go to all these orgies in the 70s. And he was talking about how he could just kind of slip in and nobody would notice, like, cause it's a giant pile of people. So he could just kind of slide in and nobody even really noticed that he was there and was all tits and butts and ass. And he's telling this story. And then he stops down. He's like, you know, it was all tits and butts and ass and, you know, it was great. And he's got a big smile on his face. And then he just kind of goes sad for a minute. And he's like, and then AIDS ruined everything. And I just, it's one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my entire life. The way he delivered it. You know, it's a thing that, you know, it's exactly what we were just talking about. Danny's such a great actor. Half the time, I really don't even think he's trying to be funny. I think he's just playing it.
He's just that funny.
He's just that funny.
When we did, Glenn and I worked on a ill-fated pilot. It was based on my book, and that probably should have been the first indicator that it was ill-fated. But we made this pilot. But before you do the pilot, mm-hmm. you do a table read, and everybody comes in, and all the network execs and studio people are there, and Donald Sutherland was playing the character based on me's father in the show, mm-hmm. but he wasn't available for the table read, and Danny read his part. I don't know if you remember this.
No, I don't. I don't think I actually.
Maybe you weren't there that day.
I think I was not there that day for some reason.
But Danny, every time he did the line, it was a mixed feelings for me because it was so funny.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kept thinking, there's no way Donald Sutherland's going to be as funny as this.
Yeah.
And I was right. But anyway, yeah, it was just one of those things where I think with certain people, when they just talk, they're funny.
But he also, I mean, it's not, you know, I need to give him more credit than that because he knows what's funny, but like it's my favorite comedic actors have always been, I've apologized because I have said this in interviews before, but is where the difference between a comedic performance from that actor and a dramatic performance from that actor is literally just one slight notch of a dial. You know, that person just dials
it up. Jim Carrey, maybe? Or...
yeah.
The subtlety of Jim Carrey? Yeah.
Right.
Okay, yeah.
No, you know, the...
Jason Bateman would be a
Bateman,
great example.
Perfect great example.
Somebody who can... Mm-hmm. The guy in Ozark seems eerily similar to the guy in Arrested Development.
That's right.
Yeah. The way they react and... Yeah.
One little notch. One little dials it up. Just one little bit. You know what I mean? Knows what's funny about it. Has such precision and control. I've always admired Bateman for that. He's so precise with his comedy.
Can I try the other whiskey?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do that one. And then we'll take a quick break while Glenn pours whiskey. And then I have a surprise for Glenn coming up as well.
You do?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. So while at America's Biggest Booze Fest, Tales of the Cocktail, I ran into one of my oldest and dearest friends in the business,
H. Joseph Ehrman. Now, the fact that H is the proprietor of one of the country's best cocktail bars, Elixir, in San Francisco, is enough reason for me to love the guy. But H also happens to be one of the fine folks behind Fresh Victor. You've probably heard me say this before. You can buy the finest spirits in the world to make craft cocktails at home. If you use lousy mixers, you're going to get lousy drinks. And let's face it, whipping up cocktails at home can be an expensive hassle. You don't always have time to go out and get fruits and veggies and squeeze them and juice them, or at least I don't. And that's why I'm all about Fresh Victor. Fresh Victor is a line of all-natural, clean-label cocktail mixers that taste fabulous. All of the ingredients are fair trade sourced. There's no artificiality, none. And the bonus of Fresh Victor over a ready-made canned cocktail is not just the jump in quality and freshness, but the fun of actually making yourself and your guests a fabulous drink. And rest assured, these mixers are produced at a 100% solar-powered juicing plant with absolutely no waste. And right now, Fresh Victor is offering a summertime special exclusively for my listeners. Simply go to freshvictor.com, fill up your shopping cart, and at checkout, enter promo code WWD20 to get 20% off your order. Don't hesitate. Now's the time to treat yourself to the very best mixers on the market, and that's Fresh Victor.
This is Gladys. She's going to be playing the piano instead of me tonight.
What? Yes, and I lived through the Coolidge administration, and I never thought that I would ever be at my 99 years of age being with such beautiful people.
Okay, I love that. All right, now she knows all the songs. Everything's fine, okay?
Why?
Now,
why?
There's a little last-minute ditty that happens, okay? And so, Gladys, can you just get out there and get us started, please?
I'll try.
Yeah, well, don't try. Just do, okay? You've been snipping at me all morning, and you told me the Coolidge story like 100 times.
Quiet down.
Come on, girl. Let's get this going.
I think I'm going to throw up, man.
Yeah, come on. I can't do this. Okay, I'm losing my cool too a little bit. Settle down. Settle down.
So, Glenn, I want to ask you, because I feel like you're very, your ethics... My truck, I have an FJ, is making a weird noise. Mm-hmm. When I get going like 75 miles an hour, it makes this like humming noise that I believe is indicating that there's the windshield is loose or there's something going on. So I took it in. I took it to two different places. And the Toyota dealership, of course, was like, oh, we'll charge you $3,000 to fix it. I think it's the windshield related. So I called my insurance company, and if my windshield's cracked, they'll replace the windshield. So this is what I'm asking you. I'm thinking about cracking my own windshield. Is this a good idea? Because then if they replace it and it's not that, I could still blame it on the windshield replacement and then get it.
Mm-hmm. Here's why that's ethical.
Okay.
To do that. Because if it is the windshield, see, that's the thing. You don't know.
I don't know.
If you knew it was the windshield, but they wouldn't do it unless there was a crack in it.
That's it.
That would be different. Yeah.
Do I actually have to crack it, or do you think I could find an unethical windshield replacement guy and say, could you just say that the windshield was cracked? Or do I actually need to physically crack my own
windshield? Are you asking if you could find an unethical...
windshield replacer?
Windshield replacer? I imagine so. Yeah. I don't mean to disparage windshield replacers.
But there's probably somebody out there
that
would take the money from the insurance company.
You're trying to find an unscrupulous car mechanic, and
that's
I don't think you're going to have a hard time.
Okay, that's good. All right, good. So now we've got we got another one of the Four Walls whiskeys here. This is the blend of Irish whiskey and rye.
This is a five-year-aged Irish whiskey aged in ex-bourbon barrels mixed with Wiggle... Pennsylvania rye.
So that's a distillery outside of Pittsburgh.
Correct.
And I believe you're getting your Irish whiskey from the Cooley Distillery.
That is correct.
Okay. So now we know the provenance of the whiskey. Let's try. This is a 90. You're saying 90 or 92 on this?
You know.
Let's call it 91.
Sure. Right. Let's go in between. Yeah.
And how much is this a bottle?
This is much more approachable price-wise. This is sold out, by the way.
The Hoi Polloi could get this, is what you're saying.
The Hoi Polloi could get this, yeah. Right. This is a $90 bottle of whiskey.
It's gone, though.
It is gone,
so I'm going to revisit my comment from earlier in the show when I said, when I asked you if this is a limited thing. Of course it's not. Of course you're going to make more of this. If you've already sold it out, you'd be dumb not to.
This is the one this is more proof of concept for what we have planned in the future. I guess I never got to the end of that answer. The short version is that The long play was always to look. There's, like I said, the 15 year. That's limited. That's gone anyway. Like, there's no way we could continue to do that. And we could start. You know, we could start aging it now. But anyway, the Irish American. That's the mass market release that we're aimed toward. So whatever we put out in the future will be very similar to the one that you're tasting now.
And this one is delicious. Obviously, we're doing this one without any water in it, right? You didn't put any, not obviously, but we are doing this without any water in it. And this has a little more spice on it. And I think the rye influence is going to do that. But again, very agreeable. I think there are people out there who get scared by whiskey. You know, it gets you and it's too much. And this thing, while it certainly has complexity to it, it has some oomph to it. This is, you could sit around and just drink a few glasses of this while watching Sonny.
We were like curious to see if we could figure out a way to create something that has the smooth sippability of an Irish whiskey, which Irish whiskey is really great for. You know, it's much more agreeable to the average person also, right? But something with but add the spicy complexity of a rye to it, and it holds up better in a cocktail. So now you've created a whiskey that sips like an Irish and mixes like a rye. So that's why we say it's blended for bartenders, because what we'd like would be for the bartender to only have to reach for one bottle.
So now you're going to, there's a festival coming up in the September called Bourbon and Beyond. I've been part of that in the past. I might be part of it this year. We don't know yet. But I know that you are going to be part of it. You, Rob, and Charlie are going to go there and do the Sonny podcast from Bourbon and Beyond. It's the middle of September. Guys, go get tickets. Again, hopefully I'll be there. But the bigger question is, are you looking forward to doing more of that type of stuff? Getting out, meeting bartenders, meeting consumers, meeting people, and really, you know, pushing your wares.
Honestly, that is the most exciting thing to me on the horizon, because one of the reasons why I wanted to do this is because I've been searching for, you know, outlets for my own creativity outside of the entertainment industry. And being a whiskey enthusiast, I thought, God, that would be so fun. It's just sort of like one of those, like, not childhood dream, because I wasn't into whiskey as a child, but like, just one of those things that I just thought, like, God, that would be so fun to create my own version of something that I love, you know, and to really have a hand in picking, you know, what the mixture of rye and Irish is going to be, where the Irish comes from, which casks it comes from, and all that kind of stuff.
And you, and to be clear, and I've read this in a Rolling Stone piece, while Rob and Charlie are involved, you took the lead on sort of developing the flavor profile and because they're not into whiskey as much as you are.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. You know, they're my partners in this because it makes a lot of sense. And, you know, the whole idea behind this was to celebrate the four walls of the bar and to celebrate 15 seasons of Sonny and to give something to the fans. So, you know, of course those guys are involved. But it's a little bit more of a pet project of mine because of my enthusiasm for whiskey and because I'm the only one of the three of us that really consistently drinks whiskey straight, you know, so drinks whiskey for the flavor of the whiskey. You know, Rob likes a good Manhattan, but that's why it was also important for us to do something that mixes well into a Manhattan, you know, because I think traditionally Irish whiskey doesn't necessarily mix that well into a Manhattan. I mean, like, you can do anything, but that's where the rye comes in. And it does make a very, it's different than just like a bourbon Manhattan or a straight rye Manhattan. But, but because it was an Irish that was aged in ex-bourbon barrels and you're mixing the rye in, all of a sudden it really mixes well into those traditional cocktails.
And I got to imagine, you know, the excitement for you in terms of creating something and then going out, you already know, accomplished a lot in the entertainment field. Obviously, you're on one of the most successful shows of all time. You've produced movies, you've done this. But this is a space where, you know, you're a new guy. And I got to imagine that's exciting for you to go out and be like, all right, I'm going to go and meet distillers and I'm going to meet whiskey makers and I'm going to see what I'm doing stacks up.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, and that's part of the reason why we did it as a drop, because we were like, you know, let's see if what we like, and my partners too, over at Spirits of the Night, you know, there are partners in this, and you know, there are some whiskey drinkers over there. So I wasn't, you know, going completely out on a limb, the only one who had to sort of figure out whether this was good or not. And we've got professional whiskey tasters and whiskey experts that are helping us put together the various blends. So I'm not tasting every whiskey on the planet. I'm only tasting really, really good ones that whiskey experts are like, this is great. Try this. But you know, it's really just a matter of like, look, when we created It's Always Sunny, I didn't know how to write comedy either. You know, I didn't know what I was doing. I just knew what I liked. And so it's always been sort of an experiment in like, what if I create something that I really, really like and just see if everybody else likes it too. It worked with Sunny, and so far it's
working with this.
It's working with this.
And so Rob's got the soccer team going, Wrexham. Mm-hmm. What's Charlie doing? What's his extra, just golf? I'm saying you've got your whiskey. Rob's got his soccer team.
Uh-huh.
Charlie got a little side project going on?
I don't think he's got, you know.
He plays a lot of golf though, right?
He does play a lot of golf and is a phenomenal golf player. But, you know, he's also, you know, he writes a lot. So he, you know, he's writing movies. He's creating stuff with people. He's got projects that are in the works, you know, in the movie business, you know. So I think that's where most of his focus is right now. You know, I've been itching to do something totally, totally different. Which is why this kind of became my thing, because I'm so excited about it. And like I said, the guys are involved. You know, it's sort of something that I've really championed and pushed.
Well, I'm sure you're appreciative of all that Sunny has brought you and just the phenomenal run and being able to stay on the air and be relevant and still great for as long as it's been. But yeah, right? You know, when you do it this long, anything. I mean, I you know, I've been doing this podcast for 2.5 years, and I'm ready to give it up right now. This might be the last episode.
This could be it.
This could be the end.
We're putting the nail in the coffin right now.
You know, no matter how rewarding something is, if you do it long enough, you gotta scratch that itch another way. There's got to be, you know, not that you're mailing it in on Sunny by any means,
no.
but you've been doing it. Like, it's a thing that you're very familiar with, and I know for me personally, when I really, really get pumped up is when I find myself in a space that I'm not comfortable in.
Yeah.
And going, can I fucking do this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can fucking do this. And maybe I fall on my face, but it's like, that's the thrill, is just not knowing how it's going to turn out.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, if we're not trying and failing and taking risks, then I don't know. It's just sort of life becomes a little bit boring, I think. You know, I was willing to try this venture and to fail at it. If that were to happen, I wouldn't regret it in the slightest, because what I would have regretted is never trying it. You know, so far I've been really, really pleased with the reaction that we're getting from the people who are actually tasting this stuff, who've actually gotten their hands on it. And so it really feels something like I can, like something I can stand behind, you know, which is why I think, you know, we will probably press forward with some sort of a mass market release.
Well, it's great. And before I let you go, I actually brought you, since you're, you know, you're in this whiskey world, I know that you're a fan of the rye. So I brought you from my private collection, a bottle of Michter's 10-year-old Kentucky Straight Rye.
Ooh.
Whiskey. Look at that for you.
Well, for those of you who've been paying attention.
And that's about, if you try to find that on them, that's about $400 or $500.
I'm so excited about this.
And I don't want you to feel like you owe me anything for me taking this out of my private collection.
Uh-huh.
I did also bring a screenplay that I just wrote.
Oh, no, God. Don't make me read your fucking screenplay.
I did bring the Michter's for you, because I know that's sort of one of the gold standards in the rye space, along with Whistle Pig, and I know you're a fan, so
I'm a huge fan, and I've never tried the 10-year rye. You know, for those of you who've been paying attention, I am a big fan of Michter's rye, and I'm very excited about this.
Well, they'll be at Bourbon and Beyond for sure. They've Joe Magliocco, who's the owner of Michter's is usually there every year, and
yeah,
you'll be tasting a lot of good stuff. And
that's awesome.
I'll be tasting it with you. But
well, hopefully you're there because you know you can introduce us.
I need to be there.
It'd be nice if you were there.
Well, listen, Glenn, it's a real thrill to see you again.
It's
man.
Been fun,
and I'm really happy for you with this Four Walls. I think you're on to something.
Yeah,
I don't know about the $1,000 bottle all the time.
Yeah,
but this one that everybody can drink. By the way, the 15-year-old Irish whiskey, brilliant. I'm just saying.
You know,
don't forget this common folk over here, and that's what you can do with the other one. And that's you said it's gone now.
Well, and that one's that you know this one's $90 because it's a limited batch. But you know, once we get this on the shelves in a more mass market way, it'll probably be closer to $30. You know, it's not we're not gonna, you know, we don't want people to have to break the bank. Our whole plan with this is to have it feel premium enough to where you really can sip it straight, but also not be so expensive that you feel bad if you're pouring it all over the bar as you're pouring shots. Yeah, you know what I mean? That's what the bartender's got to be able to take the bottle. You know, I mean, our favorite place, we like to say our favorite place to see these bottles is in a pile of empty bottles of Four Walls.
And it's a good looking bottle, too.
It is nice.
It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Still going strong.
Yep.
And then you got the podcast, which I believe is in the top 10 in the podcast here.
It has been. I don't know if it's, I don't think it's still there, but, you know, it's
like you guys and Smartless. Kind of battling it out, I think.
Sure.
Up there, right?
Yeah, we'll call it that.
And then me, I'm a little bit lagging while we're drinking with Dan.
Where are you at?
I'm like the top. Let me try this.
It's tough.
Whiskey, boy.
Yeah.
Woo-wee. Be sure if you're in the Kentucky area and you want to go to Bourbon Beyond, you'll get to go see the guys. You don't meet them. Don't, whatever you do, don't approach Glenn.
No.
Don't, if you don't know him, don't
approach him. I'll bite you.
Smack you down. Yeah. But always great to see you, man. And Instagram is what? At,
I don't know.
Glenn Howerton?
Yeah. Oh, my Instagram or Four Walls?
Yours.
Okay. Yeah. It's just Glenn Howerton.
Yeah, there's going to be, we'll post some video on Glenn's Instagram. I'm taking it over. Always great to see you, my friend.
Good to see you too, man.